Well, we hooped it up pretty good there, didn't we? Huh? You agree? Well, if we did a good enough job, the speaker of today might agree to come up and speak. Now, what do you think? You think we did good enough?
Yes.
Well, you all know our speaker for today. Everybody's already fallen in love with Dan Hare.
It's funny, I usually, I've been speaking on the Bible, and we've gone through this whole series in the book of Ephesians, which was written by the Apostle Paul, an ancient sage, as I call him. And as we approached this week, I thought, oh my, what am I going to talk about? I have no book, I have no series, I have nothing. I might even have to just, you know, share like about me and how this stuff has affected me. Because it's easy to stand up here and, you know, go into the language and the Greek and all the examples and put it out there. But, you know, it's easy to kind of hide behind that. And so I thought I would take just a few minutes tonight and share with you, as I reflected upon the whole series in this book in the Bible, which I just find incredibly inspirational, the continual narrative that seems to come back to me over and over and over again is, what's your narrative? What is your story? And whose story about you are you believing? And I think that's the big key. What story about your life are you believing? And why do you believe it? And I remember back as a kid, I used to play baseball in a little league, and the batter, the pitcher would warm up, and all the infield and outfield, they'd go, hey, batter. And he'd pitch the ball, and they'd go, swing. And you get all this noise going on. And that's kind of what I'm feeling, is that there's so much noise in the world about what you believe about yourself and what I believe about myself. And as we go through our lives, we go through these different stages. And in a way, you know, it's a natural progression. And depending on the parents that you had, you know, there's some good parents and some maybe not so good, but they gave you what they had. I mean, whatever they came into the game with, they passed it forward. And at this age, I'm finding it really interesting, for the last 10 years, to kind of think about what it would have been to have me as a son. Holy smokes, it would have been a handful. And I had a father who was just he was an incredibly, he's a brilliant man, actually. Finished high school, I think he had 2 weeks of college. But he ended up with, many patents to his name. He invented medical devices, and he, you know, was kind of that rags to riches story. And as I went through that whole process, the reality was, in many ways, he was very insecure, and he came out as kind of this godfather, controlling and all that sort of thing. And now as I look back, I so much more appreciate him and the journey that he went through. And as I think some of the challenges that I had in terms of this idea of narrative, our family, we were not rich at all. We were actually quite poor, working and whatnot. And then my dad was a cop, and cops are, you know, he's an Irish cop. And he was a tough guy. And then he invented this splint for broken legs. He built this company and publishing and all that. And you know, you kind of fake it till you make it in so much of the 80s, and you're projecting this image. And so on the one hand, I was always Glenn Hare's son, but I didn't really have my own identity because I was in the first family, this, you know, the founders of this little company, a couple hundred people. But, you know, as a kid growing up, I remember in the summers I'd work in the machine shops and the assembly thing, and it was always, oh, there's Mr. Hare's son, Glenn Hare's son. And after a while I thought, wow, do they know my name? And so this identity thing comes on. And so this whole notion of narrative about who you are, it's pertinent to me. And I'm 39 for a lot of years now, and, you know, I've been kind of, I'm glad that, you know, I've kind of worked this thing through to a large extent. But as we went through this book of Ephesians, we learned that God chose you before the foundation of the world. He redeemed you by his blood, by his sacrifice, and he gave you his Holy Spirit to give you identity. And he prayed, he says, God, I pray, or Paul prayed, he says, I hope you get it. I pray that God would give you a spirit, an attitude of wisdom and revelation and the knowledge of him, so that you might know what is the hope of your calling. And so as I sit here and share tonight, I just want you guys to know that all of you in this room, and this room, oh, for the last 10, 12 years, I think it's been, and it was after my late father had passed, we didn't have a good relationship. And as the story goes, it was a couple of months after he had passed, and I hadn't seen him for several years, and I wasn't able to talk. I was in the critical care thing, and he had tubes down him, and I could talk to him, but he couldn't talk back. And I remember it was a very touching moment, and it wasn't me talking, because I still had a lot of conflict, and I was crying, and I was like, you can't go. We didn't make up yet. Stop it. You got to get better. And so it was really this painful time. And I said, you know, Dad, you did the best you could. You're a good man. And I didn't believe that when I said it. It was the words came out of my mouth. And at that moment in time, I thought, well, I just said this thing. And he went like this, no. And that was his confession to me. And so he passed away not long after that. And I'm sitting, I ran an organization called the Independent Film Society. We'd bring in a Sundance Film Festival kind of film and a director and do this little event. And it was the night after or something, and I remember I drank too much wine. I was kind of foggy. I was sitting at the lumber yard having coffee and reading the paper, and Georgina walks up and sits at my, there's this whole courtyard, and all the tables were filled, and there was a chair, and I kind of nodded and chatted and whatnot, and I'm just trying to be polite. And then she says, what do you do? I said, film. She comes to a thing. She finds out my dad had passed, and she comes up to me, and she says, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, weird or anything, but I hear your dad died. I says, yeah. And he says, well, I think he might be wanting to talk to you. And I thought, really? Okay. Okay, now, back up 10, 20 years. I was raised as an Episcopal, okay? Just, that's the way it was. My dad really was never a believer of sorts. And then I went to a group called Campus Life, and they said that I could have a relationship with God, that God loves you, and you had a plan for your life, and you open your heart up, and you start this journey. It was very positive and whatnot. And it was kind of more that fundamentalist evangelical thing. And I thought, okay, well, this is kind of an identity, right? And then you learn all the rules and the little boxes they put you in, and some do and some don't. But as I went through this whole process and started, went to Bible school to be a pastor and got really sick and tired of that whole religion. It just didn't work for me. And I'd been 10 years pretty much without going to church. Never shook that thing with Jesus inside, but the organization of it. And so in a lot of those faith-based things, this stuff is a little shaky, this idea that you can talk to the dead. I mean, they'll quote something in the Old Testament that says these big bad words, and I'll say, well, wait a minute, it says in Hebrews that there's a great cloud of witnesses surrounding you, cheering you on. So you get all these conflicting kinds of things. And so Georgina says, why don't you come down to my church? And so for 6 months, I remember coming down here on a Monday or Tuesday night and then up in Escondido, and I got my first message from Andrea Dare. And for 6 months, literally, I had a book, and someplace at my house was writing down all of these messages, and a good number of them were from my father, whom I didn't have the chance to make up with. I didn't have the chance to have a man-to-man talk, because both I had grown and he had grown. And I think at the end, he realized that a lot of the exile that he put me in and the disinheritance and all the things of pushing me away, that he was sorry, but he had tubes down his throat and he couldn't, there's no way to communicate. And I remember I had this experience where he appeared to me and it was very, very real. And it was something out of like, it was just pure light and love. And I'd talk to him and I'd say, why? And the love would just kind of melt. And then I'd want to yell at him, but I couldn't, because this feeling of love was just so real and so there. I finally got the question, why did you do this? Why did we this and that? And he just looked at me with this feeling of, I know, I know, I know. And I didn't need an answer. I just didn't need the answer, because the love overcame it. And so as I've gone through this journey coming to Fraternal Spiritualist Church, and the love that all of you have shown me, it's been kind of this who am I, coming from kind of a fundamentalist background to now being this really very comfortable spiritualist. And coming from a background where, yes, I did study the Bible, studied it for 20 years, in depth, languages, the whole thing. And I embrace it, and I'm so glad for it. But as I've grown, I've seen that it really comes down to this very simple thing, the relationship that we have with God. And all the chatter in our world, every one of us, of somebody telling you a narrative about you, and they want you to believe it, and to some degree you are, and some degree you aren't. Some days you are more, and some days you are less. You know what I mean? And I don't think that, well, maybe there's one person in the room. I always say there's one person that doesn't affect me. But you know what? I think it affects almost everybody in this room. And so, at the end of the day, I think of this verse, and it's funny because I have no notes in these things. I'm just talking, and so you'll have to forgive me if I dart around just a bit. And I won't be long because I want to have a lot of time for message bearing. But in Acts, it says that, and they gathered together, they gathered. And they sang and they worshiped and they loved each other. And it says they felt a sense of awe. And that word awe is a sense, it's a word that means there's something supernatural. There's something happening here where 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2, it equals 3 or 3 times 33. It's much bigger. And it's this internal thing that happens with us when we surrender our lives to the living God, and we acknowledge what he's done for us, that he created us and he redeemed us and he loves us and he's got a plan for every single one of us in our lives. And you know what? I think probably the biggest enemy that each of us has, and the biggest blessing that each of us has in the same deal, is our mind, how we think. You know, Jesus made this most incredible statement, and it burns in my brain. He says, you know, as a man or woman thinks, as you think, so are you. So guess what? If you're listening to chatter and You're listening to somebody that says you're a loser, you're ugly, you're this, you're that, and you believe that nonsense, guess what? You're going to start to feel ugly and loser and all that sort of thing. But when we get to this place and we gather together with our brothers and sisters and we experience the supernatural love, and we've seen it here, and even of recent, you know, with, I can't tell you how touched I was when, with the gathering around Ray and taking him in and basically loving him until he passed over. Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, just an amazing supernatural kind of melt the butter sort of thing. You just kind of get that warm, fuzzy feeling all over. And so, as I close tonight, I just want you to know that both you've affected my life in just such a cool way. And I'm kind of at this point where more than ever in the last 12 years, I'm feeling like, yeah, this is really my home. This is my church home. And it's funny, I had coffee with a friend from, 30 years ago, and he's a good guy. You know, I got nothing bad. We all have our boxes, I suppose. And he'd probably be concerned about me if I was, you know, at this. And I've told those guys, I said, hey, look, you know, I just go and be me and I say the things that come through me. And they can't argue with it. And it was really good to see him, but it was good to see how I had transformed. And, you know, Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And the first two words of that is, I am. And there's power in that name. And you know what? I am Dan Hare. And there's power in the universe because I'm a being with the power of God. And every one of you, I would suggest, recite that. I am. Look in the mirror. Say your name. And I'm beloved of God. And he goes before me. And he's got a pathway. And while I'm on this earth, I have the opportunity, if I choose to take it, to be of service to other people. Like with Ray, and we can cite so many examples of loving and caring in this church. It's just an amazing thing. And the thing that I love about it is the love. It's not the doctrine. It's not if you know a bunch of frickin' Bible verses or if you know it in that language or this language. It's that feeling. It's the love that comes out of you. And so, you know, Jesus said one really interesting thing, and I'll close with this. He says, you know, love one another. He says, if you guys love one another, the world will know that God sent me. John 17, go read it sometime. It's in a bunch of different versions. But if you love one another, it's the example, and it's like a magnet. And that's how we can show the world the love of God, by loving each other first. I'm done. Thank you.